This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, my name is Scott Watley. We appreciate you being with us. Be sure and check out our website, haystackhelp.com. There you'll find a lot of great companies to do business with, as well as referralsforseniors.com. And again, these aren't meant to be directories with multitudes of companies in each category. We just try to search out the right couple of partners and find people that we know you can trust and that we trust and that we've checked out and know will do you a great job. Well, we are glad to have in studio today and a new partner with us, Blake Harris. Blake is with Mile High Estate Planning. And so, Blake, welcome to the show.
Scott, thanks for having me on the show. Excited to be here.
Hey, always great to talk about topics that no one wants to talk about. People put it off, don't they?
People do put it off. I'll actually tell you a quick story. When I started my practice about 7 years ago, I was, of course, an estate planning attorney. Let me try that again. When I had my children 7 years ago, I was an estate planning attorney. And it wasn't until my kids were about 2 years old before I did my own estate planning. It's like the roofer that goes out and fixes everyone else's roof, and you come home and you have a leaky roof yourself. I did take care of it about 5 years ago, so I got my part done. But I definitely understand, yes, putting it off is the biggest mistake that people make.
Absolutely. So let's kind of start at the beginning. Give us a little background on yourself, what got you into doing what you're doing.
Sure. So I've been in estate planning. I've been an attorney for about 10 years now, and I focus pretty much exclusively on one thing, helping families create estate plans and administer them after a loved one passes away. I like to think back to the story of a family member of mine, my grandma. She never made a great deal of money. She grew up in the Great Depression, but every penny she had, she saved. And then as she got older, she was not willing to meet with an estate planning attorney. She didn't want to take the time to do it or put the investment into making it happen. And then what ended up happening in the final about 2 years of her life, we saw her entire estate, just a couple hundred $1,000 nearly totally wiped out because of long-term care cost, a conservatorship, a guardianship, and money that could have gone to pay for my law school ended up being all wiped out because of the long-term care costs, probate costs could have all been avoided had she just taken the time to meet with an estate planning attorney.
Sure. Once again, Blake Harris is with us. He's the owner of Mile High Estate Planning. Check out that website, milehighestateplanning.com. Great website. Tells you everything really you need to know. And, something we were talking this last week, put a lot on education. You do seminars where you just want to help people understand things, because there's a lot of misunderstandings about what an estate plan is. A lot of people think, I've got a will, I've got a plan.
Right. So we do monthly estate planning seminars. These are free to the public. And our goal is to help people avoid some of the most common estate planning mistakes. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of the cure, and that's certainly true when it comes to estate planning. So if you've been thinking about putting together an estate plan, please go to milehighestateplanning.com, sign up for one of our free seminars, and we'd be happy to educate you so you can avoid some of the most costly mistakes that we're seeing people make.
Great. Now, let's kind of give a course overview real quick kind of talk about these a little bit. So when you talk about an estate plan, kind of talk about what all makes that up.
Okay, so here's a question that I get all the time. I get this phone call 10 times a day. Hey, Blake, heard you on the radio. How much does a trust cost? And my answer is, you don't want a trust. What you want is an estate plan. There are several components to what goes into an estate plan. A trust is a component of it, but also you want to have a will as a backup, funding documents that which transfer your property from your name into the trust. What happens all too often is somebody will, with a different law firm, create an estate plan, create a trust, and fail to fund that trust. They end up paying for the trust, and then they end up paying for the probate costs after they pass away. So include an estate plan, which should be a will, a trust, as well as a complete set of incapacity documents and guidance that goes along with that in the forms of a family guidance letter that we give our clients, Mile High Estate Planning, or some other type of guidance to help settle your estate. And then also, you want to make sure that whatever estate planning attorney you work with, that they will offer ongoing reviews so that as your life situation changes, marriages, births, deaths, you inherit some property, you move to a new location, your estate plan stays in line with your goals.
Right. Now, a will is basically only a piece of paper that helps kind of after you die, right?
So a will can do two things. Number one, it can nominate a guardian for your minor children. So if you have children under the age of 18, you can make sure that it's your mom taking care of your children, not your father-in-law, who you may not have the best relationship with. So part one is anyone who has minor children ages 18 or under certainly should have a will with a guardian and maybe an emergency guardian as well. Also with a will, you will get to choose who receives your property or choose who doesn't receive your property. However, a will is a ticket to the probate court. So if you have a will, you will be sending your estate through probate.
You know, we've heard this term incapacity planning, and a lot of times people know that maybe a loved one's kind of heading down that road, but yet they don't want to talk about it, so then all of a sudden they wait too long, or then the person is incapacitated, and then that just creates problems. So what are some of the ways that you have found successful in getting people to maybe talk with loved ones about this?
Well, just to give a little bit of a context, Colorado, generally our laws, in my opinion, are very good at helping make life easy on the citizens. Compare this to the state of Texas, where the laws are written pretty much just to ensure employment for attorneys. However, in Colorado, we lack a very important law, which is an alternative decision maker statute. What an alternative decision maker statute says is that in the event of your incapacity, there's an automatic list of people who can step in and make decisions on your behalf. First would be your spouse, next would be adult children. We do not have this law in Colorado, so if you become incapacitated, the only way that a loved one can make a decision on your behalf is go through a court-supervised process. This is lifetime probate, and it comes in two forms, conservatorships and guardianships. Probate after death is something that I would recommend trying to avoid. More importantly is avoiding probate during your life. Probate after your life is going to cost a couple thousand dollars. If there's a dispute, it could cost tens of thousand dollars. Conservatorships and guardianships, these tend to cost about three times as much as death probate. So you want to make sure that your loved ones have a complete set of incapacity documents. The first document that everyone should have is a financial power of attorney. This is for making financial decisions. Next is a medical power of attorney for making medical decisions. Next is a HIPAA release. HIPAA is a federal law which protects the privacy of your healthcare. If you become incapacitated, you want your agents to be able to access that protected healthcare information and share it with the doctors so they can make informed medical decisions. And finally, a living will. A living will says if you're in a permanent vegetative state that you do want to have life support removed.
Right. Once again, if you're just joining us, Blake Harris is with us. Blake is with Mile High Estate Planning. Check out their website, milehighestateplanning.com. Go on there right now. Register for one of their free seminars. They do them monthly. Again, absolutely free. Chance to meet Blake. Ask your questions and make sure that you have the right kind of plan that you need that will help you and your loved ones. Long-term care planning, we usually don't think about until we are older, you know, and a lot of times that can be a little late in life too. So enlighten us a little bit on long-term care planning.
Scott, I'm going to put you on the spot for a quick second. Okay. You're a smart guy, but what do you think is the average cost for a one-month stay in a nursing home?
Most of the time around $10,000, $11,000.
Yeah, you're looking at $5,000-$10,000 or more, depending on whether it's assisted living,
right,
or memory care. There's an easy way to avoid this, and it's to set up what I call a Medicaid Protective Trust. You'll need to do this about 5 years in advance of moving into the nursing home. And if you do this, you can transfer your assets to a trust. You will still have a lot of control over those assets. So if you need them for your care, there are ways of pulling those assets back into your estate. However, once you pass away, this allows you to move into a nursing home, let the government, which you've been paying for all the years to supply this care, pay for that bill, and then when you pass away, your assets will pass to your own children.
Right. Because that's what everybody wants to do, is protect their assets, right?
Exactly. It's about protecting your assets. It's about protecting your family's assets. But it's more than that. It's also about reducing conflict within the family, and it's about privacy. Probate is a court-supervised process. Your estate has to get filed with the county court, and potentially anyone could go in there and look up to see what type of assets you have, what type of assets your children are inheriting. By creating an estate plan that keeps you out of probate, not only do you reduce cost, not only do you protect the assets, but you also protect privacy and family harmony. In some cases, the beginning of probate is the end of the relationship between children. So estate planning, it's about two things, protection of the assets, but also protection of family harmony.
Right. Now, is the best thing to do is kind of get a family together and talk about this, if they're all local here in Denver, to come and sit down with you to kind of where everybody gets a better understanding of this, or how does it work?
So We are more than happy to meet with other family members, and if other family members would like to be involved, we're certainly happy to have them. However, we are interested in serving the client. It's mom and dad, and sometimes the children may not all be super happy with how the parents are going to distribute the property. I know that there's going to be a lot of children out there that are not real happy with me, and that's fine. I'm here to serve my clients. However, if it is a family that has harmony among it and they all want to be involved, we're more than happy to have more family members involved, and it actually works better that way. So that when the time comes to administer the estate plan, there's no surprises.
Right. And, you know, all of us are quick usually to get a second opinion in the medical world. If some doctor tells me we need surgery, we go get a second opinion. Never hurts to get a second opinion. If you think you've got a plan, give your office a call at 720-924-6171. Say, hey, I think I got a plan. I would just like for you to review it and see where we're at.
Exactly. If you've created a plan and you're a little bit uncomfortable, you're not 100% sure that you've done the right planning, or maybe it's been a few years or you did your planning out of state, give my office a call. We'll always do a free initial consultation. We'll always sit down with anyone who brings an estate plan that was done by another law firm, look it over, and give you our honest opinion on it. In some cases, we will tell you, you've got a great plan. You don't need to do a thing. In some cases, we'll say, you know what, this plan is actually pretty good, but there's minor things that you could improve upon. And then in some cases, I've even said, I apologize, but the money you spent was not wisely spent. I really recommend we redo the plan. I do not oversell my clients. I want to put my clients in a better position than they were when they came in before.
Right. Now, when you look at some of the plans that you've seen come through your office, what are just consistent main points that are missing, or is everybody different?
So, I mean, there's different things that, different areas where I think we can improve on different plans. The biggest one, the biggest mistake that I see, and some of the most respected law firms in town will make this mistake, is giving outright distributions. The word outright is a bad word. There's another attorney in town who calls it a 2-4-letter word, outright distributions. Mm-hmm. And generally, most attorneys would do a pretty good job about making sure that minor children, that nobody receives property before they're 18, or probably best not to even give too much money to an individual before they're 25 or 30. But then what I see is the attorney will draft it so that the money is distributed all to the beneficiary the day that they turn 30. If you do that, and then the next day your child's spouse files for divorce, you could see your child lose half of the money that you've left for them. So the biggest mistake that I see in other estate planning documents is outright distributions. Instead, what I recommend doing is creating a trust where at a certain age, perhaps age 30, you allow your children to choose who their trustee is. This way, they can have liberal access to the money. If they want to make a complete distribution or a large distribution from the trust, they can do that. But we never force money into beneficiaries' hands, because doing so gives the ability for a divorcing spouse, a creditor, or if they are forced into bankruptcy, if they have a business fail or medical illness, they could lose their entire inheritance. So mistake number one to avoid, outright distributions. Mm-hmm. The other common mistake that I see often is not funding the trust. You've created the trust, but if you don't fund it, you still end up in the probate court.
Right. Well, Blake, this is great information. We're looking forward to our shows with you. You know, I'm just telling you, there's so many people out there that have misunderstandings about this, the myths out there. So we're going to try to help you out with Blake and his shows. But I tell you what, go to a free seminar, folks. And you know what? I hate to even call it a seminar, because this is just a chance just to have a conversation with him, to understand some of these things we're talking about: estate planning, will versus trust, the incapacity planning, long-term care planning, asset protection, how to avoid probate. So those are the main things he covers. All you have to do is go to milehighestateplanning.com and register now for that free class. Their number is 720-924-6171. So, Blake, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Haystack Up Radio. We got to take a short break. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at Enchanted Kitchens. At Enchanted Kitchens, it's all about the magic of design. Whether you're remodeling your kitchen or building a custom home, Enchanted Kitchens offers a full-service design center with multiple product lines to meet any budget. And right now, when you mention Haystack Help Radio, you'll receive 15% off your Europa brand cabinets. And after you visit their Experience Center in Englewood, you'll get a no-cost, no-obligation in-home design consultation. Hey, after all, the kitchen is the heart of every home. Call Enchanted Kitchens today, 303-376-7588. That's 303-376-7588. Enchanted Kitchens is a member of the Haystack Help Home Team.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Knowledge in Reverse, brought to you by Steve Hurley and Affordable Interest Mortgage. As the old saying goes, knowledge is power. And in the world of reverse mortgages, this knowledge is critical. Now, welcome to Knowledge in Reverse.
Welcome to Knowledge in Reverse. My name is Scott Watley. This show is brought to you by Affordable Interest Mortgage and Mr. Steve Hurley. Steve is the reverse mortgage specialist there. You can reach Steve at 303-885-0254, 303-885-0254. Glad to welcome in studio Kurt Rogers. Kurt's the owner of Affordable Interest Mortgage, and Kurt's going to cover some things today about the pros and cons of a reverse mortgage. So, Kurt, I know we don't have a ton of time to do this, but, hey, we're going to lay out some important facts for people today.
Yeah, there's a lot of myths about reverse mortgages, what they do, what they don't do, how much they cost, you know, how you lose different things. And I think some of the people need to hear the clarity of what is really the truth and what's not the truth. Reverse mortgage, as you know, Scott, it's not for everybody.
Sure.
But it is for a lot of people that need the extra financial boost or security.
Right. All right. So we're just going to talk about some of the myths and, again, some of the pros and cons of a reverse mortgage. And, you know, one of the probably the largest myths out there is that you don't own your home anymore. The bank owns it. Well, guess what? With a regular mortgage, Kurt,
the bank owns that one, too, till you pay it off. But and that's kind of part of the difference where people say that you never owned the reverse mortgage home, which technically you don't because you're going to stay in the house and you're not going to make payments on it. You still have to pay your taxes and insurance and HOA and do some upkeep, but you don't have to make the mortgage payment. So the thing with the reverse mortgage is the bank owns it. Now, upon your passing, the house stays in your estate.
Right.
And here's where people don't understand how a reverse really works, is they're told that the bank, if something happened to you, they just take it back. Well, no, that's not the case. Because the house goes to your estate, it goes to your kids or whoever you've designed it to go to. At that point, the children have 6 months to a year to figure out what they want to do with it. They're able to refinance it, sell it, take the proceeds from it. Now, we're going to kind of cover the proceeds and how that works as we go through this. But when you have a reverse mortgage, there's a percentage of the value versus what you can borrow.
Right.
Well, that percentage pretty much stays intact throughout because as you're paying or not paying on the reverse and the payoff's going up, so is the value. So they kind of work together. But you own the home. You have complete control of the home. Unlike a standard forward mortgage, if the market crashes and something happens to you and the payoff happens to be higher than the value, like in 08, that happened a lot, even though it goes to your kids, they're not liable. They have no responsibility to pay off your reverse mortgage. The bank gets it back, and they take care of it. They cannot come after your estate. They can't come after your money, no matter what. So it actually has a separate little advantage that even if the market goes south.
I mean, really a protection.
Really does.
Yeah.
And most people, you know, like my wife and I have talked about, we don't want to move. The house we're in is the house we're going to stay in. And as long as we're healthy enough to stay in that house, we want to stay in a house, and a reverse mortgage is a good way to do that.
Sure. All right. Again, some of the myths, my payoff continues to increase.
It's really not a myth. It's a fact. It does.
Right.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's something that's hard for us to understand. So let's say you have a reverse mortgage, and your payment's $2,000 a month. Your standard payment's $2,000 a month. And of that, $1,500 is principal and interest. The other $500 is tax and insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So if your payoff's $200,000 and you go to a reverse mortgage, they're going to tack roughly $1,500 a month on top of that payoff.
Right.
So every month it's going to go up by $1,500. So over a year it's going to go up by $18,000. So let's look at that. Yes, it's going to go up. But like I said, so is the value. So if the value, let's say, was $300,000 and it goes up by 3% or 4%, it's going up between $12,000 and $16,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the value is going up, but so is the equity. So you're not really losing out. There's other advantages that come in on a reverse. Plus, the thing you forgot is you're not making $1,500 a month payments.
Mm-hmm.
While your payoff went up $18,000, what went in your pocket is $18,000.
Sure.
So now you're able to handle those situations that you might need. For some people, it's paying for the medication. For some people, it's taking care of doctor bills. For some people, it's being able to take a vacation that they couldn't take before, mm-hmm. or pay off debt, or do home improvements. Be able to live a little bit less stress-free because they're now not making that $1,500 principal and interest
right.
payment.
And some people, just a little peace of mind, just looking over and seeing some money.
Yeah, that they can handle it if the car needs brakes.
Right.
And those speed bumps of life come along, and if you're on a fixed income, like many seniors are, that becomes very difficult to be able to withstand any kind of speed bumps to come up. You normally got to get family and friends. And I can assure you, at my age, I don't want to go to my kids and ask them for money.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my goal.
Right. And, you know, reverse mortgages are really not complicated, but here's a couple of things you got to understand. First of all, you know, Steve Hurley, again, will be glad to sit down with you. Sit down with your family members, hey, your CPA, your attorney, whoever you want to go through things. But then, again, another layer that's the advantage for the customer is they go through a counseling where they can, once again, maybe some questions came up between the meeting with Steve and them.
Correct.
Where then they can come up and they're going to get the explanation again from a third party that has no skin in the game whatsoever, right?
They actually have no skin in the game. And some people say it's so complicated on reverse. Well, part of that is because many people thought it was a bad idea going in. And one of the reasons was that your payoff was going up. But when you take everything into considerations, currently right now, many financial planners are advising the use of a reverse mortgage because of its simplicity and what it does. It allows you to keep some of your reserve some of your retirement money and defer it down the line because you free up that $1,500.
Right.
So you don't need to have extra money. If you got Social Security coming in and you get an extra $1,500, sometimes that allows you to take your 401k or IRA and kick it down the road a little bit so you can outlive your money. So that's one of the advantages of a reverse mortgage. It's not complicated. You only have to have a few basic things. You have to be over 62, which you win. Mm-hmm. Scott, you're over 62.
Yep. Almost.
Almost. you have to have some equity in your house, and that's all depending by age. You can't currently be in a bankruptcy. They used to allow that to happen, but because of what they call LISA, which is taxes and insurance still have to be paid, right. They want to make sure you have enough money to do that. So in most cases, that won't work. But those are the basic things.
Right.
Over 62. Now, both people don't have to be over 62. If you got a married couple, your spouse could be 50, 45. It's okay. They'll still do the reverse mortgage for you.
Sure. Good deal. Kurt Rogers with us. This show is called Knowledge in Reverse, brought to you by Affordable Interest Mortgage and Steve Hurley. Steve's number, 303-885-0254. It is absolutely a free consultation to talk with Steve, whether by phone or you want to make an appointment, run by the office, he'll come to you, whatever the case is, Steve will be glad to help you. We're talking about some of the myths now, and now we're going to slip over to some of the benefits of a reverse mortgage. And Kurt, you just mentioned, hey, you never have to move or make a mortgage payment. To me, you could stop right there.
Yeah. I never have to make a mortgage payment. Again, it's critical. You got to make sure you still pay your property tax, your homeowner's insurance. You got to make the house livable. You can't, let it fall apart. It has to have normal upkeep. If there's an HOA, you still got to pay that. But as far as the principal and interest portion of the payment, you don't have to make that anymore. And as long as you stay in the home 6 months and one day, you can treat that house as a reverse mortgage.
Okay.
Now, if you have a vacation home, and you decide to go to the vacation home for 6 months, minus a day, you're good to go. Or if you decide to live in another part of the country for a period of time, or several, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But your primary residence, it cannot be on an investment, can't be on a second home, has to be on the primary. So if you've lived in the house for 10, 15, 20 years, you don't want to move. You're comfortable with your neighbors, you're comfortable
right.
with your house, you know it. That's the nice thing about a reverse. It gives you that peace of mind that you don't have to move.
And it's also federally insured.
That's another nice thing about it. That kind of goes back to when I said they can never take your house away from you. You can never lose it. As long as you're living in a house, no matter what the value, they can't come after any of the money. It's yours. The federal government protects you no matter what the value of the home is.
Right. Now, also, like I said, guaranteed place to live. So if something happens to one of the spouses, the other one still gets to live there, correct?
Yeah, and that had been a problem previously, but what they've done to change that, again, we'll go back to that spouse that's 50, let's say, and you're 65, and all of a sudden you're 80 and they're 65. Well, if something happens to you, they don't have to change anything. They're still allowed to stay with the same terms as what the lease was or what the reverse mortgage right. was forever. They get to stay in the house. They don't have to make any payments because the whole reverse mortgage from day one is designed for that person, that youngest person, to stay in that house for as long as they want to without making the principal and interest payment.
Gotcha.
So it really does give you peace of mind. For example, if that was to happen to me, if something was to happen to me and I had a reverse, I'd be very safe with knowing my wife never had to move. She never had to make a payment.
Sure.
So and it if makes you it want, easier on her.
Yeah, and if you want to, I mean, there is some financial flexibility with payment options. I mean, hey, if you want to and you want to throw a little bit back on, you know, you can, right?
And that's the funny thing. Many people, and you bring up a good point, Scott, many people don't realize that if you want to make a payment on your house, you can make a payment on your house. Now, why would I do that? Why would I do a reverse and make payments on the house? The rates are going to be relatively the same. So if I'm making the payment, why am I getting the reverse? Because I don't want the payment. Well, the advantage to that is the flexibility of the reverse allows you to tap your equity. Let's say you owe $100,000 on a house that's worth $500,000, and your reverse mortgage has a line amount of $300,000. That means you have $200,000 available. If you want to pay on it, you can increase that $200,000. To a higher number by making payments. But let's say you don't want to do that. That $200,000 grows every month, every year at the same rate that you're paying on the mortgage. So your equity line, as they call it, is getting bigger every year.
Right.
Which gives you so much more flexibility. So making a payment at sometimes might be beneficial if you're still working at 65, which many of us are doing that,
sure.
up to 70, 75. Continue to make the payment. You still build the equity because it's coming back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to you on this show and other shows about many people look at paying off their house as one of the best things they can do, and I don't disagree with that. But I look at the equity in your house no different than I do an IRA or a 401k. If I'm going to put $1,500 a month away into an account and it's going to grow in value, why is the equity in my home different than a 401k? That's my money.
Right.
I paid to have that equity. Why should I not be allowed to tap that equity when I need it as I get older?
Sure.
Just like I would my 401k. The advantage to a reverse mortgage is that money's tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
So as it's growing, you're not paying taxes on it when you're taking it out, unlike a 401k or an IRA. So I have an added benefit to that.
Right.
So there's some good benefits to that for reverse.
All right. Do you have to do any kind of disclosure, sir?
Nope. Yeah, actually, I do. Affordable interest mortgage, 7400 East Arapahoe Road, Suite 109, regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191.
Kurt, always great information, sir. Thank you very much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Call Steve Hurley today. Hey, if you've got questions, figure out if it's right for you. As Kurt said, hey, it's not right for everybody, but you know what? It could be the right tool for you to give you some financial freedom and some financial security. Call Steve today, 303-885-0254.
You've been listening to Knowledge in Reverse, brought to you by Steve Hurley and Affordable Interest Mortgage. If you would like more information about a reverse mortgage, call Steve now at 303-885-0254. That's 303-885-0254. Regulated by DORA, Equal Credit Lender, NMLS 298191.
Hi, everybody. Jack Corrigan. There's no better time than now to visit my friends at Len Lyle Chevrolet. They're open, following all proper safety precautions, and ready to offer terrific deals. Suburbans for over $10,000 less, better than $7,000 off a brand new Equinox. And Len Lyle Chevy has 0% financing on almost every model. Plus, they need trade-ins badly, so they're willing to pay over book value. Len Lyle Chevrolet, it's time for you to go east and pay the least. And did I mention they need your trade-in?
Here's why you need KLZ's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh, on your side. He understands how the jury thinks.
In the context of a personal injury case where you have been hurt by someone else's negligence, the idea with that is that you're then going to try to recover to get back to where you were just prior to that incident occurring. And what that really means from a juror's perspective is that you're going to be asking them to award you money. So when we talk about fairness, we're talking about what six people that don't know you, that hear evidence and have to make a unanimous decision, will decide as to what fair value is. And so you and I, when we get hurt, have definitely an idea of what we think it's worth to us. But the question is, what can you articulate to those other individuals who don't know you and are not involved in this process to get them persuaded about what it is that they think the case is worth?
Call now for a free consultation. 303-806-8886. Flesh and Beck Law. They get results.
Got a question for the station? Email info@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome to Nutrition and Wellness with Dr. Mark Riggs, brought to you by 5280 Functional Medicine, where there is a better way to take control of your health. Their number is 720-722-0386. Again, it's 5280 Functional Medicine. Check out their website, 5280functionalmed.com. And with that, we'll introduce Dr. Mark Riggs. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Scott. How are you?
Hey, it's doing good. Great to see you.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Yes, sir. I tell you. What do you think about all this? Have you had any patients complain much about the smoke?
A few, asking opinions as far as, you know, what they could possibly do about it. And it's really tough, you know. Some people are extremely sensitive to it. We've got family members who are really sensitive to it. And I'm fortunate enough that it doesn't really faze me too much.
Right.
I go out there and huff it and run and no problems. But other people with asthma, with bronchitis, with, you know, allergies, it gets really tough. One thing that you can do is if you like to work out and you like to work out outside, as early in the morning as possible before all that traffic gets going and allow things to settle and you're dealing with less particulates in the air from the cars going down the road and all that stuff. So, so that's one thing that you can do. And, you know, in the meantime, you can, you know, use a humidifier inside and mix it with essential oils, with a diffuser and other things like that to kind of help, you know, moisten those passages and help alleviate some of those respiratory symptoms.
Absolutely. Once again, it's 5280 Functional Medicine. And I thought we'd just kind of, you know, at least start out with this, Dr. Riggs, and just kind of maybe talk a little bit about, you know, the type of patients that you are seeing over these last few months during all of this that we're going through, and just the different conditions and different age groups of your patients that you're seeing. So just maybe kind of take us through a few patient stories a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. That's, I like doing this cause it's, you know, we're an unconventional practice, and it's not just patients coming in with a symptom and expecting to get a drug to, you know, suppress that symptom or mask that symptom. What we do, and I know I've mentioned this before, but what we do is when we have a patient inquire that they want, they're thinking about, you know, functional medicine and what, you know, what that could do for them, what that can offer beyond the conventional standard that everybody's used to. What we typically do is we typically have a short conversation with an inquiring patient over the phone, answer any questions that they may have, kind of get a rough idea of where they're coming from, where they're at as far as their health status currently, and maybe a little bit about what they've been doing lately, if anything, to get to the bottom of things. And then what we have patients do is fill out our paperwork that's online. Anybody can go there right now, actually, and on 5280functionalmed.com. Our paperwork is on the tab for new patients, and there's a female intake questionnaire and a male intake questionnaire that's fairly extensive. It gets into a lot of those lifestyle factors that we talk about that has a tremendous impact on either the promotion of health or the cultivation of future chronic disease. And then we have a health symptom questionnaire. And so the female and male intake questionnaires we have people fill out, that's the upfront initial intake paperwork. And it's, like I said, it's more lengthy because it dives into a lot of factors, not just past medical history, not just family history stuff, you know, not just asking about current symptoms. It does all that, and not just a medication list, right? Most people are familiar with the, you know, I fill out my immediate health history, maybe my family history, my symptoms, and then my medications. And then that's what the doctor looks at. And like you've joked about before, then the physician's assistant looks at it and asks you the same exact questions, and you get two different people asking you the same exact questions, and it becomes very frustrating. Well, we gather that information plus a lot more on lifestyle factors, right? Sleep and stress and emotional emotions and relationship status and dietary patterns that a patient follows on a regular basis, and a lot of things that impact health in a big, big way that just get glazed over in a regular conventional office. And we take a pretty deep dive into those things. And then the health symptom questionnaire that we have patients fill out, that's more something that we do on a, every few months basis to objectively quantify, functional improvement in various areas of health. And because a lot of times, when we get into a treatment plan with a patient, some things happen quickly and some things happen more slowly. And we have patients tell us from time to time, I definitely feel it. I feel it's a dramatic difference from just 2 or 3 months ago. And then other people may say, I'm not sure that I really feel, maybe 10 or 20%. And then the medical symptom questionnaire sort of jogs their memory and reminds them, holy cow, wow, I went from an 81 point medical symptom questionnaire down to 24, and that's a really, really awesome improvement. So, boy, I guess I have really improved a lot more than maybe I, maybe I'm just not paying very close attention, right? So that it's an objective measure that we do. So those are on our website. We have patients fill those out, and then the patient comes in. They either email the paperwork to us ahead of time, or they bring the paperwork in with them. We go over that paperwork. Again, the initial visit is 90 minutes.
Wow.
Where we overview that paperwork, we ask each other questions about, lifestyle and health history and supplements and all sorts of things to get an idea of where we're what we're dealing with and where we're at and how we can help, how my wife and I and our health coach Bryn can be added to this patient's healthcare team to help in some way. And a couple of interesting cases that we've had recently, had a patient come in. This is a patient that we've been seeing for a little while. So a returning patient. Okay. And he is a diabetic, man in his 60s. And he is, I believe, retired or working very part-time. So he's got lots of time to, do his own learning about his own health issues. And he's got more issues besides just diabetes. So, so we're working with him, and we're running advanced cardiometabolic profiles on him from time to time because he's a diabetic and requires much closer monitoring than, you or I or anybody without diabetes. It's a serious chronic condition that, that we work with in our office, patients with these blood sugar issues like prediabetes and diabetes. And we work with patients in addressing the underlying cause. Again, the functional medicine approach is addressing the underlying cause of a particular condition, not just strictly treating the symptoms. And many of us are familiar with diabetes being a problem, something having to do with blood sugar. But often patients are misled by either, the news or the media or the drug commercials or their doctor that diabetes is a blood blood sugar problem. My blood sugar is too high. That is what diabetes is. And that's false. High blood sugar is not diabetes. High blood sugar is called hyperglycemia, and that is a symptom of the underlying cause of diabetes. And that underlying cause is insulin resistance. And this is what the conventional standard of care never addresses. The conventional standard addresses the downstream effect, the high blood sugar, and never addresses the upstream cause, the insulin resistance. And that is why more people now than ever are being diagnosed with diabetes despite the overwhelming, surge in more and more people being on anti-diabetes drugs, quote unquote,
right?
So the treatment is at an all-time high, and it's a abysmal failure because it never gets to the underlying problem, the insulin resistance. You can't get to the insulin resistance with a drug-only approach, which is the conventional standard. You must take a functional approach by modifying lifestyle factors that developed the diabetes condition in the first place. And so as I'm working with this patient, this man in his 60s, and we are running, he already knew that he was a diabetic and he's got some other issues, history of, various issues that I won't get into, but that makes things a little bit more complicated. And so we're measuring an advanced cardiometabolic panel once every 4 months or so. So 3 times a year. And this cardiometabolic panel is exceptional. It's very unique in that it goes beyond the basic lipid panel of just measuring total cholesterol and HDL and LDL and triglycerides, and then just measuring glucose and hemoglobin A1C. That's what most people typically get when they go to the conventional doctor. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that because the basic lipid panel is really, really bad at predicting your future risk for a cardiovascular event, which diabetics are at a much higher risk of developing cardiovascular complications, mm-hmm. because of the chronic systemic vascular inflammation. That's one of the hallmarks of the disease pathophysiology. And then we measure much more than just glucose and A1C, because glucose is a very easily swayed blood sugar biomarker that basically gets thrown off with any type of stressor, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're running late to your appointment, your blood draw, or if you had a difficult blood draw and it was exceptionally painful, or if you were stressed out that morning, if you skipped breakfast that morning, if you had coffee that morning, so the glucose is not extremely reliable. We do that. We expect that to be fasting, and we want it to be between 75 and 85, but it's not the most reliable and shouldn't be done by itself. And then same thing with hemoglobin A1C. We oftentimes see glucose normal, hemoglobin A1C high, and the third marker, insulin, normal. Right. And in that case, you know, if insulin's normal, hemoglobin A1C is high, it might not necessarily mean that you've got a problem with blood sugar issues being too high. It may be that your red blood cells are living a little bit longer than the average 120 days, which is what the hemoglobin A1C test is based on. It's a four-month average of blood sugar readings. And so if your red blood cells just happen to be sticking around a little bit longer than average, right? Average is middle of the road. Some people are less, some people are more. So if this patient happens to be somebody that's their red blood cells are just sticking around a little bit longer before they get recycled, then the hemoglobin A1C is going to be artificially elevated, even though glucose and insulin are going to be perfectly normal. So no reason to worry and no reason to be on any kind of anti-diabetes drug.
Right.
Right.
And so how often should someone, we'll take a non-diabetic, but just, you know, someone like myself, but just, man, you don't want to get diabetes, so you want to stay on top of it. How often should you run that A1C?
I tell my patients, instead of running the crummy basic lipid panel and glucose and A1C once a year, like you get for mm-hmm. free at your doctor's office, why don't you invest in a test that's actually going to benefit you and actually going to be a much, much better predictor of long-term consequences and potential long-term harms from cardiovascular complications? Invest in a $200 advanced cardiometabolic. It's not $1,000. This is an extremely valuable test that can literally save your life because it catches things much further upstream than the current standard of care. You know, like I mentioned, the basic lipid panel, the hemoglobin A1C and glucose can. So it's potentially able to catch things much further upstream. And for $200 once a year, what a awesome investment, right, in yourself. So that's what this gentleman is doing, but he's a diabetic, so he needs this more often. And not only that, but he likes the feedback, right? Because he's very invested in what he's doing, and he makes changes and nips and tucks
and
things.
And very wise to be there.
Right. And so he uses the objective testing as leverage to leverage himself to make better decisions and to change things. And I think I probably mentioned this in the past, but you know, some patients in the past have taken our requisition form or our results of this advanced cardiometabolic panel back to their conventional doctor and says, hey, what do you think of this? And you know, can I run this through your insurance? You know, can you sign off on it, run it through insurance perhaps? They take one look at it and the look on their face as described by my patients is like, they have no idea what they're looking at, and they basically tell the patient, all this isn't necessary. And I tell my patient, well, that's exactly true. In that doctor's eyes, all of this nuance is totally unnecessary because that doctor is probably, regardless of what all this extra stuff says, that doctor's only tool in the toolbox is a statin. So if your cholesterol is over 200 or your LDL is over 100, you get the statin drug, and if it's not, you don't get the statin drug. It's very binary. Whereas with what we do in our practice in a functional medicine clinic is it's very much nuanced. And all of these extra biomarkers aren't run just for fun. They're run because it helps us tailor a food program and a lifestyle program specific to what we find. So for example, going beyond just the basic lipid panel, we're looking at the number of LDL, not just the volume of cholesterol in the LDL vehicle, which is what LDL means. When you get your blood work run and it says cholesterol, LDL, HDL, and LDL, the LDL and HDL are vehicles. And in those vehicles are different lipid particles, including cholesterol. And the number is a volumetric unit. You'll notice on the right-hand side, it's milligrams per deciliter. So it's the volume of cholesterol in the vehicle. It's basically analogous to looking at the expressway out the window here and looking at the number of passengers in the cars to assess the risk for a traffic accident.
Oh, okay.
And what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at the total number of LDL particles, the total number of HDL particles, because the more particles in the bloodstream, the more traffic on the road, the more risk of an accident. And the smaller and denser those LDL particles are, the more likely they are to veer off, because they're bouncing around like, you know, pinball machine inside the arteries. And the smaller and denser they are, the more likely they are to embed themselves in an artery, be gobbled up by a macrophage, and form an atherosclerotic plaque. And so we need to know much more than just the LDL volume, the cholesterol volume inside the LDL particle, which, by the way, is only about 50% accurate at predicting future cardiovascular risk, meaning 50% of the time when that's high, you're at risk. But the other 50% of the time, you're not at risk at all. So those people, let's say they have an LDL of 125. It's over 100. The doctor doesn't like it. Well, half of those people, statistically speaking, roughly half of those people may truly be at risk because their LDL particle number is high and their LDL density is high, right? The density is small and dense. Whereas the other half, they're not at risk. Mm-hmm. They might be at 125 or 130 or 150, but the small there's fewer small dense LDLs and there's fewer LDL particles. So they're not truly at risk. It's right. A false positive, you know, the doctor's going to say, oh, you need to go on this drug when mm-hmm. that is an inappropriate treatment for that patient. So how do we know? We don't know based on the basic lipid panel. We don't know what camp you are in. Are you truly at risk with an elevated LDL or are you not at risk with an elevated LDL? Right. For example, that's just one example. Yeah. Right. And so we're looking into those things with this patient in particular, because diabetics have a bad habit of having dyslipidemia. Right. And that constitutes a small portion of cardiovascular risk. What about inflammatory markers? We're also looking at inflammatory markers in these types of patients and in this patient in particular, because diabetes is a chronic vascular inflammatory condition. And it's a chronic full body inflammatory condition, but the thing that have most of the damage being done is in the blood vessels, because that's where the blood sugar is at the greatest amount. It's floating around the blood vessels like tiny shards of glass, tearing into the inner lining of the blood vessels, creating inflammatory reactions that increases likelihoods for blood clots and strokes and heart attacks. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at vascular inflammation numbers. When's the last time your doctor's run a vascular inflammation panel on you, right? Ask yourself. Are they running insulin? Are they running high-sensitivity CRP? Are they running lipoprotein A? Are they running your apolipoprotein B to A1 ratio? Are they running homocysteine? All of these markers are incredibly important for more comprehensively assessing a person's future risk of a heart attack or stroke. And it is so exceptionally important for these particular patients with diabetes. And if you're not having those run, you could be at tremendous risk and you don't know it. And I've talked about this in the past, Scott. Half of people that show up to the emergency room who've been diagnosed with a heart attack, right? They had a heart attack or they had a stroke. Half of those people have absolutely unremarkable, totally normal cholesterol numbers. And that is pretty much what we're putting all our eggs in that basket when it comes to diagnosis of a future cardiovascular event or prediction of a future cardiovascular event, right? That is what patients are familiar with, that their doctors run. And if that is only half good at predicting, it's a coin toss,
right?
How good it is at predicting your future cardiovascular risk, that stinks. Yeah, that really, really stinks. So we need to go beyond that. We need to run the lipoprotein particles, which we run, the particle size, the particle number, and we got to know vascular inflammation numbers. We got to know the insulin, the CRP, the lipoprotein A, the lipoprotein B to A ratio, and the homocysteine, and among others. We run all of these things. And then based on what we find, we tailor specific therapeutic foods, because foods contain therapeutic nutrients. Mm-hmm. And specific supplements, and even sometimes specific botanicals and lifestyle modifications that patients need to begin to adjust. And when we do that, after 3, 4, 6 months, we start seeing some significant improvement. And sure, this can be in diabetics who've been diabetic for 10, 15, 20, 25 years sometimes. It's just that they've never been counseled, they've never been diagnosed more comprehensively, and they've never been counseled on how to make lifestyle changes that will dramatically affect their chronic condition. Why is that? Because our conventional system, our medical model, our Western medical model, and our conventional healthcare practitioners, they are not trained in lifestyle medicine.
Well, and that's why everybody jumps around all these weight loss clinics, all these weight, because nobody wants to make a lifestyle change, you know, and everything. So, you know, that's one thing that's really, really, you have to, and I think that comes with your 90-minute, you know, sit down with them. You got to get them to understand, hey, you didn't get here in 2 weeks, and I can't fix you in 2 weeks.
Right.
This is a process.
Yeah, and I totally understand that there's people out there that are looking for, you know, more of the quick fix, and that might not necessarily be our ideal patient, is somebody that's just looking to pop the pill and that be the end of it.
Right.
Our ideal patient is somebody who has been dealing with something maybe for a while, and they're extremely frustrated because they go to one practitioner and their solution is just a drug. And then they go to another practitioner and the solution might be a different drug. Or it never seems like, well, how is being on more and more drugs, you know, making me healthier? And what can I actually do something about my life? Patients will actually come in and say, I had a conversation with my doctor. Is there something I should be doing with my lifestyle? Is there something I should be doing with my diet? Something I should be modifying, changing to help reduce my risk? And they are met with nothing. They are met with no solid guidance, because that is not within their scope of practice. That is not within their training skill set. So that brings me to my other interesting patient that I had recently, another cardiovascular case. We're running a similar advanced cardiometabolic panel. But what's unique about this situation is this broke a record at our office, a patient who had a heart attack in his mid-30s. Now, I'm 33. And this is a patient that's not that many years older than me and just had a heart attack. And when that happens, that's pretty clear that, okay, this isn't all lifestyle induced. They've definitely got some genetic susceptibility there. But as I've mentioned in many previous shows, your genetics do not rule the day. They do not run the show. And there are plenty of things that you can do about your lifestyle to keep a particular genetic propensity for a particular disease pathology at bay. And as long as you are on your best behavior and you remain on your best behavior, even somebody like this person can see significant results and reduce their risk of, you know, dying. I mean, this was a God blessing, this heart attack. It was a quote unquote minor heart attack, because he wasn't doubled over in the hospital for 3 months. He experienced some symptoms. He went to the hospital. His troponins were high. He had a heart attack, and but his symptoms were relatively minor. And he's like, well, what do I do? Do I go to cardiac rehab? What do I change about my diet? What do I do about my lifestyle? And the doctor basically, his words, I went in, I saw my cardiologist. My cardiologist says, this is what you have. These are the 6 medications you're going to be taking for the rest of your life. And that was his guidance.
Wow.
There wasn't any guidance on what I need to change about my diet, how I need to get my stress under control, how I need to get to the bottom of getting better sleep quality and quantity, how stress influences your cardiovascular risk. That is not on the radar of any conventional practitioner, mm-hmm, most of the time, and in particular, cardiovascular specialists like a cardiologist. It's very much, here's what you've got. Just like my patient said, here's what you've got, and here's the drugs.
Yep.
See you later. We'll chat. We'll see you in 3 months. Do I need to do anything? Just take your drugs. Do I need to change anything? Just take your drugs. And he knew well enough that, well, that doesn't seem logical, right? It, I guess it makes perfect sense to these people that are just kind of in a little bubble and they deal with sick patients and they deal with prescribing drugs all the time. And so it's just very black and white. Here's what you've got. Here's your drugs. But his intuition served him well in thinking, I think there's a lot more nuance to this, and I think I need to seek help elsewhere. And that's when he gave our office a call, had heard us on the radio from a distance away, and gave our office a call, became a patient, and now he's actually going to get some much more comprehensive workup, and a much more nuanced treatment plan. I can't even say he's going to get a very nuanced treatment plan because he didn't get one initially. Right. So there's nothing to really compare it to. We're going to be monitoring him. We're going to be tailoring his treatment specifically to his needs, and he's going to be in really good hands here going forward because he found a functional medicine practitioner that's going to work him up for these lifestyle factors that made it such that his genetics expressed a problem in having a heart attack at 35 years old, right? So
why do you think, with all the advances that have been made and functional medicine is really out there now, I mean, it's a lot of places, why is our standard of care with the regular EMD, why are they not looking at some of these things that you guys do?
You know, that's a long conversation and it's a complicated one. I know we only have a minute or two left. And so I know that a lot of it, has to do with supply and demand. Patients are demanding a quick fix. I get it. A lot of it has to do with conventional medical training being bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry, and and a lot of it has to do with insurance. So you got three big things right there: the demand from patients who want a quick fix. And it's because they probably haven't been properly educated by anybody. Right. And then you've got the doctor's education that's being paid for by the pharmaceutical industry, so they're going to be schooled in primarily pharmaceutical therapeutics. And then you've got the insurance companies that have a vested interest, a monetary interest in keeping the treatments short and passive.
Right.
And it's very lucrative business out there. I know we've touched on in the past statins, the statin drugs, the class of drugs that just lower your cholesterol in the United States alone is upwards of $20 billion a year. So with that kind of money driving conventional treatments and not functional treatments, that's not going anywhere. So people really have to open their ears, listen a little bit, educate themselves a little bit. You can't just trust your doctor and everything that they say anymore. You've got to go because their knowledge is limited to what they know, just like my knowledge is limited to what I know.
Exactly.
And your job as a patient is to gather a competent group of practitioners who can comprehensively assess you. I have my part. Your conventional doctor will play their part, but you can't just put all your eggs in one basket. And so that's what I would say.
Right. So just think about this as you're driving around or maybe working in your cubicle or ever how you're listening to our show today. When's the last time your doctor sat in front of you for 90 minutes just to talk to you, go through all the forms that you filled out when you sat out in the waiting room, and just to go through your health from A to Z, so to speak? I hope you'll give 5280 Functional Medicine a call and Dr. Riggs, his team, they are ready to help you. 720-722-0386. Check out the website, 5280functionalmed.com. All of our past shows are there. If you've missed some, we'd love to have you go and check those out as well. But I hope you'll get by and see Dr. Riggs. So, Dr. Riggs, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. 5280 Functional Medicine, 720-722-0386. I want to thank you for being with us today. Hope you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.